I'm Lynette. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Lynette.
I just celebrated 3 years sobriety. So our speaker tonight is somebody pretty special.
Hi, Sarah.
I met this person in October 2019 when she had, I think, a little less, maybe, of 30 days sober. I met her at a meeting I was not supposed to be at. I met her at a meeting I'd never been to before. But I went because circumstances prevailed that I was there. And this person got up and shared. And when she shared, I thought she was going to preach. She just shared straight from her heart from the podium there at the Alano Club. And she spoke so raw and so much from her heart that I knew that she was there because she wanted sobriety more than anything in the world. And that drew me to her because I was told early on that this is not a program for people who need it. It is a program for people who want it. And if you want it, you're in the right place. If you need it, you're also in the right place, but you got to want it. But anyways, this person's very, very, very near and dear to my heart. I love her very, very much. I've watched her grow over the last couple of years. She is coming up September 28th, I believe, on 2 years of sobriety. It is actually my pleasure and my honor to sponsor her, and I am very grateful for her, for having her in my life. Now, without further ado, our speaker for the night, Amber Kay.
Hi, guys. I am Amber, and I'm an alcoholic. And disclaimer, that's where the facts end, right there. The rest of all this is going to be my experience with living a life with the disease of alcoholism. And then I hope to then share my message of strength and hope to you guys that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous has given me and the freedom that working the steps has also given me. My very first time I ever drank, I blacked out, and I was 11. My mom was playing games with neighbors, and they had Zimas in the refrigerator. And one of the neighbors had a daughter my age, and we decided that it would be fun to drink some Zimas. And couple in, all I know is that I'm outside in Idaho in the winter. My clothes are wet. I'm jumping on the trampoline. And I have this dual feeling of this is probably a horrible idea, and this is fucking fantastic. That was literally the last thing I remember was jumping on the trampoline. And I come to in my sister's room, sleeping on the bed, my hair crusted back, both of my elbows and both of my knees rubbed raw. And I knew it ended poorly, obviously. And it was pretty indicative of my drinking career right there. Looking back, it actually was pretty surprising that I didn't realize a long time ago that I was an alcoholic. I'll never forget my mom's face when she walked in the room, because my mom deals with the same disease that I deal with. And she looked at me and sad and scared at the same time, you know, mad. I remember being really, really embarrassed, and I asked her to please don't tell anybody, you know, and didn't touch alcohol for a very long time after that. I played sports, stayed really active in school. I always liked school. I always had a lot of friends, and school was really fun for me. I always looked forward to school. Stayed pretty active. Once I became, it's about my freshman year in high school, moved out of my mom's house, moved in with my dad. My dad was a federal firefighter and worked 24-hour shifts. So he had moved from San Francisco to Washington to keep his job with the federal fire department, and it left me at my house by myself all the time. So he would leave at 8 in the morning and would not return until 8 o'clock the next morning. And at first that seemed okay, you know, but what happened was it just gave me a lot of free time. And I'm going to tell you what I did with that free time. I partied, and I went out. And from about the age of 15 to 19, I remember being, I was living in Seattle, so we were about an hour and a half from Canada, and we were about an hour and a half from Seattle. And so we were just in a prime spot to have all, and at this time, raves were really big. So here I am in line at a rave. I'm 16 years old. I'm partying all, we're hanging out all night long, drinking, doing other sorts of things. And I very quickly got very, I'm going to go ahead and say addicted to going out and being a social drinker. And socializing, all my socializing was really always turned around, drinking and going out and partying. When I was 16, 17, 18, it was really easy for us to get our hands on IDs. Prior to 9/11, you could go across the border, no problem. So I was bar hopping at 15, 16, 17, 18 years old. And I really did like that lifestyle. And, at school, it was funny because I was playing this dual role. I always felt like a dual person. I'd go out and party my pants off and then come home and on the days that my dad was there, act like an angel, you know? And, I played varsity sports. I was, 1 year at the AC president, was in the choir. You know, I was super involved, but, that lifestyle started to catch up to me about my junior year. And I noticed that I started not caring a lot about playing sports. I quit practicing all the time. I didn't want to. I remember looking forward to basketball season and then going, oh, my God, I don't want to be on the bus all day when we have away games twice a week. I'd rather be at home hanging out, you know. So I quickly started to see, too, that, you know, I knew I had a problem, but I didn't want to give it up. I it was like I was feeding an invisible, you know, I couldn't put my finger on it, but it was like I enjoyed high-risk behavior. I enjoyed going out. I enjoyed going with somebody that I really didn't know and going to some after party and hanging out with all these people, you know. I remember one time I left all my friends in Canada, went with some guy over to his house, and he had a bunch of buddies over there. And I sat there and kind of came to after being pretty drunk, and I thought, oh, my God, I could, like, nobody would know. Nobody would know where I went. I'm in a foreign country. Nobody would know what happened to me. I remember one time being in Canada, being so drunk. Of course, I'm the last one out, right? We would go up with, like, a group of, like, 20 people, and I can't find the hotel, and I'm so drunk, I can't even walk. So I have two random guys helping me walk down the road, and I can't find my hotel. And my friend, I love her to death still for this, but she came and found me, and she looked around the hotel room and realized I was missing. And she knew me well enough to know that I was probably in a bad spot. And so she came and found me. I would have ended up sitting on the corner of the street that night or in a bad situation had she not come and found me. You know, and those types of high-risk behaviors were all over the place for me in my lifestyle. I can think of a lot of them. So my senior year, night before my senior year starts, and don't ask me why, but my dad thought it was a really good idea to get me a 1970 bright red V8 Camaro. Beautiful car. I love that car. Stick shift, too. Oof, it was fun to drive. Of course, my dad's working, so it doesn't matter that senior year is the next morning. I'm out, you know. I gave him the phone call, like, hey, going to bed, you know, 10 o'clock, whatever. And I head out, and I remember that night. And this, I started the night with Wild Turkey. You know, I should have known it was going to be a bad night when I started the night with Wild Turkey. I drank vodka later on. I drank a lot of liquor that night. And my other issue, obviously, with partaking in such high-risk behavior all the time, I was always driving my car drunk, too, driving this bright red Camaro around drunk all the time. So, like I often was doing, I was driving. I had two friends with me in the car. We just left a party. It was past 2 in the morning, and I obviously drove past a cop, and he wasn't right behind me, but he flipped his lights on. He started chasing me. I was probably going around 70 miles an hour. I saw the cop lights way in the back, and I made a bad decision. I decided to say F the cops, and I'm going to take off because I figured he didn't get my license plate yet. I had a plan to take a right, and I had a lady friend that lived up the hill right there. And so I entered city limits going somewhere between, they estimated 100 and 105 miles an hour. I tried to slow down and take a right, didn't make it. I split a telephone pole in half, spun out, hit parked cars, spun out again, hit another parked car, spun out a third time and hit a final parked car. And the investigator had stated that had I not hit that last parked car, that I would have went downhill into an apartment complex and no doubt killed a bunch of people. There was not a straight piece of metal left on that car after we had wrecked. And none of us had our seatbelts on, and it was an act of God. Actually, the only thing that I remember about the accident, and this was really my first true experience where I felt a higher power working in my life. I remember we were spinning, and I look over at my friend, and we locked eyes, we made eye contact, and I felt this immense just presence of peace around us. And I don't remember much about the accident. I guess after I wrecked the car, I tried to run away. And then the best part was that two-thirds of the people on the scene of the accident knew my father from the fire department. So it was a huge embarrassment to my dad. There was a curse. All the firefighter guys all worked so much that at least one bad thing happened to all of the kids at least one time. And I guess I was up for mine. And my dad was at the police station before I even got there. And I was lucky to be in one piece. They still don't know how none of us got injured. I still don't know. It is a true act of God. We all walked away from that. So that was my first push into starting to realize that I had a big problem with alcohol. And obviously a problem with the way I felt inside, you know. I couldn't put my finger on it, but I knew there was something different about me than other people. And throughout the course of my senior year, I was going through court dates and stuff, and found out one funny thing, too. It was a very good life lesson as well. You can have a million friends. I used to have a lot of parties, too, right? My dad was working all the time, so I was known to have the biggest parties at school, no doubt. And all of a sudden, all these friends that I had, right, I can't even get a ride home from school. I'm a senior. A couple times I had to ride the bus. I had to ride the bus because nobody would give me a ride. I lived out of town. Nobody wanted to give me a ride home. And I'm like, wow, this is some real stuff. And I started to learn some things about people and about how you think you have a million friends. And when you're partying and hanging out and that type of, those are the type of friends you have that you might be lying to yourself about who real friends are, you know. I was lucky enough. I remember my dad, I love him for this. He looked at me, and he was really mad at first, and then he got pretty gung-ho with me, and he looked at me, and he said, because I had eluding the police, which is a felony charge on my that was pending, and he looked at me and said, there is no effing way that you're going to start your life off with felony charges. There's no way. So what are we going to do about it? And I thank him for that because, you know, I didn't have that gusto in me at that point from drinking from 15 to 19, even though I was really young. I lost a lot of self-worth. I lost a lot of self-love. I, you know, through those periods of growing up and, you know, a lot of people start to build into, like, who they're going to be as an adult, I was wrecking myself, you know. So I was a mess. I didn't know who I was. I did not love myself. I struggled with a lot of internal things, for sure. And I was thankful that he was gung-ho enough to care enough about me more than I even cared about myself at that point. I went through the deferred prosecution. At first, they didn't want to do it. I'll never forget the lady. The prosecutor, first hearing, did not want to give the deferred prosecution because my blood limit was, I believe it was 0.38 or 0.34. And I was like 110 pounds at the time. So she looked at me and, you know, said to the judge, this girl was operating a V8 Camaro at 0.38. You know, we got a problem here. We got a big problem here. So she eventually, and I'm lucky that my dad was who he was in the fire department and was well-known and everything, because I know that that helped a lot, but they did give me the deferred prosecution, and I was introduced to AA. I remember I stuck out like a sore thumb in there, you know. I remember hearing some good things, but looking back now and knowing what I know now and how I am now when I'm sitting in a meeting, I wasn't listening. I wasn't listening, you know, at all, actually. I was still absolutely not ready to deal with myself at that point. And if you're not ready to deal with yourself, you're not going to want to listen, you know. So, but I completed my deferred prosecution requirements. I did the whole inpatient thing or outpatient, and then I did 30 days of in-house rehab. And when I did the 30 days in-house, I went to a great place called Sela. It's in Sela, Washington. That experience changed my life. And that was the beginning of me realizing that I've got some stuff inside me that I got to deal with, you know. And that it's not about what's going on the outside. It's about what's going on the inside. And that I was definitely fighting some invisible enemies that I did not know how to deal with, but I knew that they were there. And I knew that I was different than a lot of other people that I knew and that I loved and that I hung out with. And so shortly after high school, I was able to, and also I skipped my whole sophomore year while my house was being built. So the phone calls to my dad about skipping school never got there. So my senior year, right after I wrecked my car, I decided to just drop it on him and say, hey, I lost all my credit for my sophomore year, and I also have a full year of high school to catch up on. So that senior year, I went to AA, I did my classes, and I somehow caught up and got all of my school done in that amount of time. And when I graduated, I did feel like a different person. I definitely worked hard to finish up and finalize all. It was almost like just like 2 or 3 weeks before graduating, I had wrapped up my outpatient classes. I fulfilled my commitment with AA and all my meetings, and I got the stamp of the deferred prosecution that it was, I didn't have a felony charge, you know, and that was great. I became graduated, got a good job as a certified nursing assistant right out of school. I didn't want to go to college yet because I didn't know what I wanted to do, and then I met a guy, didn't date a lot in high school. I'd rather be free and not have to worry about, you know, having to meet up with you. I would prefer to go out and not have to deal with that. So I didn't really have a lot of boyfriends. And I fell in love. And had a baby, got married. And I knew from the beginning that our relationship wasn't right. You know, there were definite red flags, and I knew that. But I think at the time I was, I just wanted to be loved, you know. And for somebody to love me, and it was enough, you know, and I just went with it. So fast forward a couple of years, you know, there were times he didn't like me drinking for obvious reasons, because I have one drink and I have the allergy. I want more. That is always what I want, is more. And I'm that person that I would prefer not to even have one if there is not more, because all I want is more after the first drink. And he quickly realized that, and definitely did not like me drinking. So my drinking kind of went into hibernation a little bit. But the relationship was toxic for sure. There was a lot of verbal abuse that went on. And during this time, I would have to say that my story definitely involves mental health. I definitely have dealt with mental health, and I'm very open about what I deal with. I'm diagnosed bipolar, and so I deal with that. And looking back now, I've always been, you know, definitely in the category of bipolar. I'll have like really, really high bouts where I would have a lot of energy for 2 or 3 days. I would stay up all night and clean the house till like 3 a.m, go to bed for a couple hours, get up, do it again. And I would do that for a week or two, and then I'd crash for a couple of days. But there again, that brought about anxiety and depression too in between those, right? Because it plays off of the bipolar for sure. And so during the marriage, I definitely started to get anxious. I got to the point where a lot of racing thoughts, and it got so severe that it was like I had the flu. I would get nauseous, vomit. There was one point for about a 3-month period that I couldn't stop from vomiting. It was like I had the flu for 3 months. I didn't know it at the time, but I was experiencing severe anxiety. Started taking medication, finally, I was misdiagnosed a lot. The primary doctors weren't really able to put their finger on it because I'm so high functioning in a way, you know. I would take care of the kids, go to work, I would do all these things, but I was still dealing with the mental illness. And so during my marriage, I was married for 15 years, my anxiety and depression got really, really, really bad. And there again, you know, it's the classic how your alcoholism will wait for you and do push-ups in the parking lot. That absolutely happened to me during that 15-year marriage. I had filed for divorce over 5 different times. And so I'd file for divorce, and then we'd be separated for 9 or 6 months. In Washington, you have to be divorced for a year before they finalize it. So I went back several times back. We would get back together. But I remember one time I went out, and I was drinking. And the last thing I remember was holding a martini in my hand. And I come to, and I'm in a hospital. And my friend had said that I was outside, martini in my hand. I wasn't supposed to have that martini in my hand either outside. And I guess I just blacked out, grabbed the rail, and swung around, and then fell, broke my martini glass, and then rolled my face in the martini glass. Yeah. So, you know, those are the types of blackouts that I would deal with. And even though I wasn't drinking all the time during those periods, and I am your classic binge drinker. I'm not an everyday drinker. And that kept me, I lied to myself for a very, very long time about my drinking because of that fact. Even towards the end, I would, you know, drink once or twice a month. But it was like playing Russian roulette. I did not know how that night was going to end. I could never guarantee you how it was going to end. It may end okay, or it may end in disaster. I may wake up in the fucking hospital, you know? I never knew. But I still decided to play those games, though, right? I still decided to play. There was definitely periods where I went 3 years one time during the marriage without drinking. But I was so miserable inside. Miserable. My depression, the toxic marriage itself and the dynamics that had with us, we would bicker like almost every day. If we went a couple days without bickering, it was a miracle, like seriously. So it was kind of one of those things like, F you, but I love you so much, one of those types of relationships. Yeah. So I finally we moved here. Our relationship got a lot worse. I would say that the types of behaviors that, and I got worse too. There was a point where my mental health got so deteriorated that it was the first day of school for both of my young children. I believe my son was going into kindergarten and my daughter was going into third grade, and I did not want to get up to take them to school. And if anybody knows me, y'all know that that is not me. Like, I'm a go-getter. Let's do this. What do we got to do today? Like, what's the plan? And that was one of those times where I look back and I'm like, wow, that's, I really was not right in the mind. Finally decided to file for divorce. I moved out after we had a domestic violence issue. I tried to move out. He tackled me for my phone. I slapped him across the face, and then I'm the one in the cop car. But guess what? That was the best thing that's probably happened to me in terms of having to make some hard decisions. Being the one in the cop car that time, I finally realized that I had to end that relationship and that, you know, this was only going to end in disaster. And I don't know why I held on for so long, but I did. And I stayed, and that was my part of it, you know. Once we separated and filed for divorce, that's where my story really gets interesting in terms of my alcoholism. Because I had the pending DV charge, and it gave my ex-husband almost all custody of my children. And so I fought that charge for 9 months, and they finally did lower it to a disturbing the peace. But after that, the judge had said, if you have a pending charge, in family law court, we have to consider it as a charge that you've been charged with until you finalize that charge or whatever. And me being without my kids left me by myself. And let me tell you guys something. That was the scariest place in the world to be, was by myself. Because I didn't have my kids to distract me from what's going on with me. I didn't have breakfast to distract me from what's going on with me. And I still do this. My sponsor knows this. I love to be busy, right? Because that I don't have to deal with me. You know, I'm not left with just me. I'm still working on that, you know. And so my drinking and my high-risk behavior came back in full force. Stuff was I was still trying to use certain avenues to stay sober and to stay healthy. I was starting to go to CrossFit. My favorite story is I left CrossFit, afternoon class, and I drive right past the Santa Fe. And so I'm like, oh, Santa Fe, I should stop for one drink, right? One drink. Well, get in there. I still have my CrossFit shirt on. I'm all, you know, gymmed out. And I'm like, hey, let's have one drink. Next thing happens, you know, Jaeger bombs are offered. And I come to at Bob Wiley. So, yeah. And had no idea how I got there. Last thing I remember was sitting at the bar at the Santa Fe. And then I looked down. My favorite part, too, was that I'd obviously dropped a cigarette right here because I had a big burn mark right here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was a good day. That was a really good day. Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because there goes my binge drinking again. Even though I didn't drink every day, the effects of what that did to me, it would last for weeks and weeks and weeks. I would try to recover and start to feel a little bit better about myself, and then all of a sudden, that's when it's time to drink again, right? So, it was literally physically painful for me to be away from my kids for a couple of years. It took me a while to learn how to be okay with not being okay. And to giving it to God. And I think this is a big part too, is when I believe in God. But I was mad at him. I was really, really, really mad at him for everything that had gone on with my marriage. Cause I thought that, hey, I was a good person. I tried. I stayed there and tried. That's what I was doing that whole time. I was trying, you know, I was trying to do the right thing. Dicked over. That's how I felt. During the divorce, I left. I was the one that made sure that we didn't tear each other apart and something bad happened before we divorced, right? Because I felt that coming, like me running him over and like trying to back out of the house or something. Something like that happening. I saw it. It was coming. So for a while, I was really mad at God, and that was a really bad place to be because I was extremely reckless. And I was always trying to pull it together, but I just couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. I had no idea how to deal with myself. And I was looking at all the outside factors, trying to, like, work out and do all these things, and nothing was working for me. I felt truly alone. I had one good friend in life, and everybody else that I knew, I really had no business being friends with. Had some bad boyfriends. Had the classic drug dealer boyfriend. That was a fun one, you know. That was fun. It made me feel better about myself, though, right? Because I didn't do that, so it was okay. It was okay. I had the classic closet cokehead boyfriend. That was awesome, too. That was awesome. A couple of toxic relationships to distract me from my crappy life that I was dealing with. And, you know, the whole time I look back now, I was looking at everything else except for myself and all these issues. I needed to take my daughter something. So this, my drinking went on, my divorce, you know, went on for about 4 years. My family started to move close to me because everybody knew that I had, that things were not good with me. They couldn't see it, but they knew it from far away, even from phone calls and from everything else. You know, my sister moved here from Idaho. My dad moved from Washington to be by me. That was kind of the beginning of things starting to come together for me once I had a little bit of family, because I didn't have any family here. I moved here to be here by my ex-husband with his kids. And I was driving out to my daughter's house. Had not drank a lot, but just a little bit. Got stuck in a ditch. Ended up getting a DUI. It ended up getting dropped, but I did get I had a pending DUI for almost a year, actually. And that second DUI was one of the better things that has happened to me as well, because that prompted me to take a hard look at my life, because I knew for a fact the Bob Wiley incident and also the DUI were going to play for my court custody stuff with my children. And the only thing I wanted in life at that point in time was my kids in my life all the time. That's all I wanted. And all I was doing was shooting myself in the foot constantly, over and over and over and over again. It was so miserable, you know, and just couldn't see it, could not see it. So I remember driving in the car with my dad. It's really fun being 37 years old and having your dad drive you around everywhere. It's so much fun. And we're driving somewhere, and he just felt my misery all over me. And he just, out of silence, goes, "Why don't you go to an AA meeting?" And the light bulb went on. And I thought to myself, why don't I go to an AA meeting? And I remember before from going when I was in high school and everything that, you know, maybe I didn't know of any other option. Nothing else sounded good. I didn't know what else to do. I was so miserable at that point. I had nothing else. I had nothing. And it really did. It sounded like a good idea. And I thought to myself, why does this sound like such a good idea? And I'm like, and I looked it up and I was like, drop me off. So I went to the Alana Club. And I love that place. That place saved my life. When I went in there, I remember the first time I walked in, I got that weird feeling like, whoa, this place is going to be significant for some reason, you know? And like it was going to be important to me. And that was absolutely correct. Started sitting through some meetings. Did not want to talk to anybody. Was not prepared to deal with the, you know, I just didn't want to talk to anyone. I think at that point I was scared to make any kind of friends because I was such a hot mess. I didn't want to talk about myself, you know? So that was the easy way. I started going to meetings, went for 6 months. I went almost every day, if not several times a week. And I'm not going to lie, I would go a lot of the time when I first got sober because listening to everybody else's stories made me feel better about myself. I'm not going to lie. I'm sorry, guys. I'm not going to lie. But also there again, too, is that's just part of the fellowship. You know, you know that you're not alone. And that was the big part of that, was that I wasn't alone in my struggles, you know, because you guys were having the same types of struggles, too. So I was sober 6 months, was really excited about that, and my birthday was coming up, and decided to make plans with all of my, because at this point I had dumped all my old friends, so I had no friends pretty much, except for I had one friend, and her and I had been friends for a while, so she's wonderful, and definitely kept that friend, but I didn't really have a lot of other friends, so I decided to invite all my work friends to go out for my birthday. And for whatever reason, it sounded good to drink that day. And so I did my classic. I went to the gas station, and if I knew I was going to be out and about, I would get the little 99-proof vodka shots. Would roll with a couple of those. And the girl that I was with, she had no idea that I was an alcoholic or even had been drinking, and I started drinking when we were getting our nails done and hanging out, right? She had no idea. She had no idea. So I walk into the gas station, and I go in to get a pack of cigarettes. I have no food in my stomach, so the perfect cocktail for disaster, right? And somehow I black out. When I'm in the gas station, she's parked towards the fence. She does not see me. I come out, and I take off with some random guy. Just take off with him. Indicative of my high-risk behavior that I love to partake in. Perfect, classic. She thinks after a while she doesn't know where I'm at. She literally called the cops and put in a missing persons report for me because she had no idea I'd been drinking or, you know, any of my issues, you know. So I come to about 5.5 hours later, and I'm in knee-high boots, a skirt, short skirt, and so I was in my party outfit, and I'm sitting underneath the freeway with a homeless man. And this was it for me. I can't begin to tell you the way that I felt about myself when I came to and I started realizing what was going on around me. I knew for a fact that I was lucky to be okay at that moment. I knew for a fact that whatever is going on with me, it's got to stop. It's got to stop because I can't do this anymore. I cannot do this. And I became very desperate, you know, and I'd had that 6 months of sobriety, but look at my alcoholism doing push-ups in the parking lot waiting for me, right? It's out there waiting for me right now. right? That's why I'm here right now. So I had to get really real with myself because I was going to die. And this thought came across my mind. And when random thoughts come across my mind, I truly do believe it's God speaking to me. When it's just, like, you know, out of my regular train of thought. And it said, if you keep doing this, you're going to die. I cannot protect you any longer. And I knew with all my heart that that was absolutely true. That something bad was going to happen if I continued to do what I was doing. And thank God I didn't drink every day, because I just realized just recently, had I drank every day, I would not be here right now. Done. I'd have been done a long time ago. I would not have been able to handle that. I unbelievable. So I got really real. And is that clock right?
Close.
Close. How long?
Yeah.
Okay, 10 minutes. All right. So how it is now, guys, how it is now. I walked into the Alana Club after that happened, and my sponsor was there, and I remember walking up to the podium, and I was so done with everything, you know, and I didn't know what to do, but I had told myself, I'm going to do everything. Whatever I'm doing now, I'm just going to do the opposite of that, right? And so I go up, and I share, and I remember, and this is exactly how I felt, and I had said, you know, I'm going to have this problem for the rest of my life, so I better figure out what the fuck I'm going to do about it. And that is truly how I felt. It was time to deal with some shit, right? And it's time to get real. So I got an amazing sponsor, and I truly believe that from being that candid and that open and that raw that I did, you know, it was God working. God knew that I was ready, too. I was ready. I started working with my sponsor, and that anybody that is wondering, like, where do you start? Where do we go from here? Well, we go to meetings, right? So we can meet other alcoholics, so we can fellowship, and so we can meet a sponsor, and so that sponsor can guide us through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. We have to internalize the steps, because if we don't, we're liable to drink again. And, you know, that journey has brought me through so many epiphanies. It's absolutely insane to me. It's like I'm the smartest, dumbest person I know. Yep, absolutely. And, you know, once you are ready to get real, and there again, too, you got to suit up and show up. You know, I hate missing our appointments because it's like, for me, it's like going to church. If I don't make that meeting that week, I just don't quite feel right. You know, you got to put the work in. You got to meet with that sponsor, and you got to be ready and willing to be open and honest and to put pen to paper. And the other thing, too, and she knows, I've confessed this as well, you know, here I am, I have to meet her the next day, and there I am writing my stuff out, you know, right? And I would, because guess what? I would not do that if I didn't have a sponsor. I have to have a sponsor. I have to. Keeps me honest, but it makes me do my homework. I don't know why it's so hard to sit there and talk about things. It's like, no, I'm good. I don't want to tap into it. I don't want to go there. I don't want to go there. And that was the excuse I told myself, right? But you have to. You've got to go there because that's where our problem really lies. That's where mine lies. It's my feelings, my thoughts, my emotions. You know, all the things, all the drinking that I did was to cover up how I felt. Anything but feeling. I'm 38 years old, and I'm just now getting used to feeling things, and then just recently properly dealing with how I feel about that, right? Not letting it freak me out or wig me out. I had an experience where I dropped my kids off. My son was crying on me, and he leaves, and it took almost a year and a half, but I eventually rewired my brain. The first thing I thought of when I got in that car was, thank God I'm sober. Instead of, I don't want to feel like this, or God, I wish I could go get fucked up right now, you know? And we're so, you know, our brains are wired in a way where it's going to go to the easiest route possible. And so we have to rewire our brains. And when that happened, I'm driving and I'm crying because I'm so glad that was the first thing that came to my mind. Because that's true change for me. For me, that is absolute just major gain right there, major gain. Because all the time, every time I drank, I didn't want to feel. I just didn't want to feel, and I truly believe that's why I was a blackout drinker too, because it was that oblivion that I was seeking, you know, every time, every single time. Also, I want to talk about working with others and service commitments. It's changed my life. It's funny, too, because, you know, the triangle is real, you know, and we have to give ourselves to the program, too, and work with other people. My service work that I've done in my life, it was insane to me. 1 year to the day of my sober date, I was driving to the Alano Club, and it was the first time I opened. I never used to open. I always would do the evening shift. But for some reason, that day was my first opening shift over at the Alano Club, and it was my one-year birthday. And when I realized what God was doing in my life, I was in absolute awe. And I think the other thing, too, that I would definitely want to mention is that my relationship with God now, because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, is I used to go to church. I went to church for years with my ex-husband. And we would go every weekend, and, you know, and I would read my Bible. There was times I was really dedicated to that. But my personal relationship with God was not there. It was not there like it is now. God has, once I surrendered, right, and I surrendered everything to Him, I realized, obviously I'm not mad at Him anymore. We figured that stuff out. And I realized too, He put me through a process where He broke me down so far down that, that because He wanted to rebuild me, though. But I had to be broken down. I had to be, because everything that was going on with me had to go. It really did. And I'm just now coming to terms with the fact that I trust in His plan that He has for me. I know that all the things that I've gone through and done have actually been for a reason. And it's just recently I have come to truly believe that. When I start my day every day, I start with a prayer. I go through the Upon Awakening and Just for Today, and I do my daily reflections, my morning reflections. It's amazing how giving, making sure that you pray every morning and that you give your life to God every day, how it can change your life. You know, we think we have to control everything, absolutely everything. And I know that I did. And once I started to come to believe the spiritual principles that the program teaches us, like surrendering, and how much they actually truly do work. This program works. The principles are real. If you can learn to apply them to your life, they have definitely changed my life. I have more peace today than I have ever had in my entire life. I had to, you know, I had to do the work. I had to, you know, and while I was getting sober, I realized I had to address my mental health issues too. Like, cause wow, AA works so well for me. Maybe I didn't want that stamp of being bipolar, right? Cause I didn't want my ex to use it against me in court and all this other stuff. But all this broke me down enough where I was like, no, 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 no. Everything I used to think was the right move was probably not the right move. I need to think about this differently, you know? So everything started to come into play for me in terms of making better choices and doing the big stuff that really helped later on, you know, getting sober and then giving mental health a try. And I do take medication every day, and it does help me a lot, you know? And I was not willing to do that before because I didn't think that I didn't want the crutch, but I also thought that I knew better. I knew better, you know, and I now know that I, most of the time, a lot of the time, maybe I don't know. You know, I don't know everything, because this program has absolutely taught me that take suggestions and, you know, follow, be brutally honest, and do the steps, and it will absolutely change your life. How much time? Good. Thank you, guys. I'm Amber, and I'm an alcoholic.
Thank you.